Chapter 10. The Anubis Urania Temple of the Hermetic Order of the Third Dawn. London, England. July 5th, 2017. 3:04 a.m. At a few minutes past the witching hour, Shigidi, Noma and Alistair arrived at the unassuming brown brick townhouse in West London's Chelsea area, which served as the home of Third Dawn. A bolt of pale moonlight peeked through the curtain of dark sky. Alistair snorted as he slowed the vehicle to a crawl and saw the bright green numbers of the clock on the dashboard console. Perfect time to make an unexpected visit to a cult of mystics in the company of a demon I haven't seen in decades, and a dodgy god who seems eager to kill me. He parked in front of the house and killed the engine. Silence filled the space around them. Third Dawn was one of the few consistent things across Alistair's three lives. It was an occult society and magical order he had belonged to as a young man, long before he had met Noma, or even his beloved Victor. It was there, in that townhouse, that he had first found people like himself, curious to see and to understand the world beyond the corporeal, and eager to learn how to manipulate it with magic. Every time he visited, echoes those first days came to him like whispers. Even though Third Dawn was largely underground now, and they'd become more like a New Age cult than the esoteric secret society they'd been when he was a member, he still considered some of its members friends, and he didn't have many of those anymore. Besides, they possessed a rich library of magical works, even though many of the current members didn't know how to use them. They barely knew any magic at all. The library included the only copy of the Wielandrilic, a book he used to access the spirit side of London, where he could still commune with friends and lovers long lost to the ravages of time and nature. He told Noma about it when they'd first met in Algeria. He almost regretted it now. If he didn't owe her two of his three lives and wasn't still so desperately attracted to her, he would have tried to refuse. "All right, let's go," Shigidi said, when Alistair had taken a few too many seconds to stare into the dark road ahead without moving. "Past, present, future. It's all overlapping, cycling." Alistair exited the SUV, climbed the stone steps, and knocked on the door, the supernatural couple close behind him. He pushed a bronze doorbell that was shaped like a cluster of three rising suns twice and looked up, staring into the narrow red eye of the security camera that he knew was recording them. There was no response. He pushed it again. Still nothing. "I told you there might not be anyone in the temple at this time. And if there are, they are probably deep in sleep," Alistair said. "It really is an unfortunate time to show up unannounced, isn't it? Maybe we should come back when the sun is up." Shigidi shook his head. "Weren't you listening to what she told you? That's not an option. If they don't respond in 3 minutes, I'm going to kick that door in. So, if you have a phone number, or any other method of getting in or getting attention, I suggest you use it." Alistair threw up his hands. "This building may not be what it once was, but there is still powerful magic protecting these walls. You can't just barge in." "Actually," Shigidi rotated his neck with a sharp crack, "I think I can." "Wait." Noma stepped forward and up to the steps to stare up at the camera. She held her left hand in front of her and snapped the fingers of her right 3 times. Bright yellow sparks appeared with each snap, depositing something like a fine ash or powder onto her skin when they settled. She pursed her lips and blew into the spirit particle residue. The ash lifted and danced in the air, wafting its way gracefully onto the glass eye of the camera like cigarette smoke. When it hit the lens, she closed her eyes. "There is a broad man with balding, wispy grey hair, seated at a table in a blue and white housecoat on the other side," she said as the images came to her. He is wide awake, holding a hunting rifle and staring at us on the security monitor like we are some kind of scientific specimen. Shit, it's George, Alistair muttered under his breath, recognizing her description of his friend. George, the temple custodian and deputy high priest. George was one of the few members of the Third Dawn still willing to break temple rules and allow him access to the sacred manuscripts on the odd occasion. But he knew that showing up at this time of day with strangers would have set off every alarm bell in the paranoid old man's mind. Noma smiled as she turned to Shikidi and said, "Not every time, hammer. Sometimes scalpel." Shikidi nodded and quietly held out his hand to help her down the steps, though Alistair couldn't see what she needed his help for. Perhaps it was his way of acknowledging her cleverness. There was something strained about the way they interacted, and it bothered him, especially when there was more than enough to be worried about already. "All right, if George is in there and he's awake, he's probably just scared of you lot," Alistair said. He pushed the doorbell again and spoke calmly. "Hey, George, it's me. I know you're up there. I apologize about the time, but there's no danger here. These are my friends. Please let us in. It's an urgent matter. George?" There was no response. The red, unblinking eye of the camera stared back at him accusingly. Alistair's pulse quickened as he tried to think of something that could possibly convince his friend that it was safe to let him into the temple with two unfamiliar people at 3 in the morning, or at the very least, something that would make George think the situation was important enough to take the risk. Once the idea manifested itself, he spoke before his conscience could stop him. "Hey, George, listen, please, I need to see Evelyn. She called out to me." "Ah," Noma said. Alistair turned to her. "What?" He just leaned forward. "Looks like you got his attention." Alistair choked back the feeling of shame that was welling up inside him at using Evelyn's name and memory this way. She was George's grandmother, and Alistair knew she was the one who had first introduced George to the occult and inducted him into Third Dawn. He knew because she'd also been a close friend of his. He'd first met George as a chubby and eager young boy, and they had met again by chance when he was an airy young man in a small, dimly lit basement of a Soho club on Regent Street in the 1960s. They'd spent a few years partying together, and one night, drunk on slow gin, he'd told George who he really was, that he'd first met George as a boy holding tightly onto Grandma Evelyn's hand, how he'd summoned Coronzon and learned the keys to higher magics, and how a beautiful woman he'd met in the desert had given him another life, another soul. George had laughed at his stories then, thinking them to be drunken exaggerations. They parted ways when Alistair moved to Argentina in 1965, but rediscovered each other again one cloudy afternoon in the corner of the King's Head pub, 3 days before the new millennium, when Alistair had returned to London, ageless, strange, and wearing a new name like new clothes. George believed his stories then. George had never doubted him since. "Please, Evelyn needs me," Alistair said as he stared into the camera, trying to project all the depth of their shared history forward, hoping it would be enough to make his old friend ignore every instinct making him suspicious. After a few moments that seemed like hours, there was a clicking sound at the door, announcing that it was open. The three of them filed inside. The temple consisted of a small living room that had been converted to a waiting area full of frayed and ugly brown seats. 2 bedrooms that had been converted to a meeting room with a large table at its center and rows of books stocked in massive shelves, and a small room upstairs where George lived with an array of monitors and his own bathroom and kitchen. It was all old and worn, but neat and clean. When they rounded the corner of the waiting room, George was standing at the foot of the stairs, the barrel of his Winchester Magnum rifle trained on them. "What's happened with Evelyn's spirit, Al?" the old man asked, his voice shaky. "I don't know. I have to go over and find out. It's urgent," Alistair said, feeling another twinge of guilt for the lie he had told, and if George didn't put his gun down for what Alistair feared was about to happen to the man he'd considered a friend for almost 80 years. "And who are these people?" George asked. "Oh, they're old friends. They were with me when she reached out. No need to worry, they mean no harm, and we will leave you in peace soon. I'm just here to see Evelyn, spirit side." His words didn't do much to allay George's suspicions. In fact, his suspicions seemed to have spiked because his hands began to shake and his finger trembled tantalizingly close to the trigger. "Is that so, Al?" "Yes, George, it is," Alistair said, trying for a smile. "Then why didn't you ask your friends to wait outside?" Alistair glanced at Shigidi, who had already begun to set his feet. He gave a small shake of his head, but it seemed that Shigidi had already decided. Alistair was just about to shout, "Wait!" But Shigidi leapt forward and to the side at an impossible speed. He left only a trail of electrical discharge in the space where he had been. George didn't even have enough time to convince himself that he needed to pull the trigger before Shigidi's fingers wrapped around his throat, choking back a cry while another arm twisted the rifle out of his grasp. Shigidi released George, who stumbled backward, tripped on the bottom step of the staircase, and fell to the floor with a whimper. "Stay down," Shigidi said softly. "I don't want to hurt you." The old man sat up and seemed to be on the verge of fighting back, with nothing but foolish pride propelling him to take on the younger, stronger, and more confident attacker who had moved like lightning. But then he glanced at Alistair, who shook his head before saying, "I'm sorry. I really am." George spat in his direction and quietly sank back down on the carpeted floor, as if it were a bed, his chest heaving with labored breaths. Alistair hung his head and said, "You didn't have to do that." Shigidi glared back at him with green-tinted eyes that made his skin crawl. "We don't have time for games. Let's get what we came for and get out of here." Noma placed a hand on Alistair's shoulder and said, striking a consolatory note, "Look, Alistair, don't worry about your friend. Shigidi didn't do any damage." She offered him a smile. "The book?" Yeah, Alistair said, feeling powerless. "The book." He led them through the beaded screen that separated the waiting area from the meeting room. No photographs or paintings or decorative items hung on the walls, but there are a lot of old books organized neatly on an array of shelves, primarily on mythology, folklore, and the occult. He walked right to a shelf in the corner of the room and pulled out a red leather-bound volume. On its cover was what looked like a map, embossed and foil-stamped in gold. "There. Let's go," he said. They turned to leave, taking care to avoid George, who was now sitting on the bottom step of the stairs with his eyes closed, refusing to acknowledge them. Alistair was tempted to stop and check on him, but Noma put her arms in his and pulled him out of the house and into the pre-dawn darkness. When they piled back into the SUV, Alistair set the book down on the center console. As Shigidi adjusted his seatbelt, his elbow brushed against it, and he withdrew rapidly, like he touched a hot stove. "Ow!" He looked up with surprise and saw an amused Alistair, his neck strained with the effort of resisting the urge to laugh. "What's so funny?" Shigidi asked. "It repelled you," Alistair replied, still trying to hide his amusement at seeing the large and imposing god react in such a childlike manner to the touch of a book. Shigidi remained deadpan. "What does that mean?" "It's not actually a book, per se. That's just a guise, the result of some clever containment magic. Its true name is the Wielandrilic, and it's a cluster of entangled spirit particles from London's real and spirit sides. Naturally, they would repel each other and separate, but someone with access to much more powerful magic than I know of bound them to each other permanently," Alistair explained. He'd first learned of the nature and power of the Wielandrilic from his mentor and the founder of Third Dawn, Samuel Albus Dell, back in 1904, when the spiteful and ailing old man had reluctantly described all the necessary steps and drawings to execute a binding magical operation. It was only after Alistair gained dominion over Coronzon that he understood enough to set up markers for which particles belong to what side and map out the right shifted spiritual tension sites where they could be socketed in on either side of reality to create a functional Swedenborg-Heindel bridge, or, as Samuel Dell had called it, a spirit portal. But the spirit side particles embedded in it will resist unauthorized spirit entities like you. Alistair turned and adjusted the front mirror to bring her into focus. And like Noma. It occurred to him that if he had never met Noma, the Weerlandrillic would probably have just been another book gathering dust on the shelf of the Third Dawn meeting room, with no one able to use it. Still, he would never have guessed that he would one day need to use it to help her. She smiled at him and asked, "But not you?" "No," Alistair said, picking the book up again and holding it in front of Shigidi like it was a trophy. "Not me. I'm a London man." What he didn't add was that he'd taken advantage of the growing regional spiritual enterprise systems built by the spirit companies in the late 1940s to hard-code his access to the spirit side using the Weerlandrillic. "Right," she said, "and you will use it to get us spirit side, right? You know the right spells to use." Alistair put down the book and started the car. The headlights came on, piercing the darkness of early London morning. He let the engine idle as he turned back to look at Noma, enjoying being in control of the situation for the first time that night. "You know, we don't like to call them spells, love. They're magical operations." "And yes, I will. A debt is a debt." "Yes, it is," she confirmed. "And thank you." "You're welcome. And once tonight is done, perhaps you'll be the one in my debt again." She snorted. "That worked once. It won't work again. Don't push your luck, Alistair." "Fine, fine," he acquiesced. "I get it." "Good. Then drive, eh? We have a job to do," Shigidi said impatiently. Alistair's brow furrowed with thought as he put the SUV into gear and entered the road again, this time headed for Bloomsbury. He was sure that no one real side had visited the spirit side as often as he had, seeking knowledge and the counsel of the dead in a bid to escape their fate. Even now, he visited regularly to speak to old friends. It wasn't likely that anyone on this side of reality knew the spirit side of London better than he did, except perhaps people that worked for the spirit companies or government spirit departments. So he was sure he could help them get in and out. And he was sure that the Weerlandrillic was by far the most reliable way. Shit. The memory hit him like a punch to the gut. "I'm as attached to it as it is to the temple." His grip on the steering wheel tightened until his knuckles turned white. "Hey, you okay?" Noma asked. She must have noticed the change in his demeanor. Fuck. He had almost forgotten that the Weerlandrillic had been bonded to the Temple of the Third Dawn by Samuel Dell after they had fallen out and he'd been excommunicated from the group. It was a bond Alistair was yet to break, despite decades of effort. Efforts he had almost forgotten about because he had stopped trying to break the bond more than a lifetime ago and simply used the book as it was, limitations and all. That meant he never took it out for more than an hour or two at a time for his visits to the spirit side, and usually in the mornings after sunrise or late afternoons. But this was different, and the timing was unfortunate. Very unfortunate.
Are you sure we need to do this right now, love?
Yes, Noma replied.
Then there is something I think you should know, he said,
exhaling deeply and stretching out his tense fingers.
Whatever you want to do, spirit side, you need to do quickly. If the Weerlandrillic isn't back on this side of reality by sunrise, it will be summoned back to the temple, and any bridge or portal I have opened will be shut. It could leave us permanently trapped on London spirit side. If we postpone till tomorrow, we can give ourselves more time to get back. Shigidi gave him a sharp look, but Alistair kept his eyes on the road, not wanting to focus on what radiated from the perpetually pissed-off god's eyes. "You're joking, right?" Shigidi asked finally. "I'm afraid not." From the back, Noma started laughing. Alistair stared at her in the mirror, and Shigidi turned to face her too, looking puzzled. "This just gets more and more interesting, doesn't it?" she said. "Interesting isn't the word I use to describe it," Shigidi responded. "Yes, well, I'm not sure what other word to use. There is no way we can postpone. Onoru said this needs to be done today, or the deal is off. Board meeting, remember? So, what do you think, Alistair? Can you make it back by sunrise?" He thought for a moment and said, "Yes," then added, "It should be fine as long as we don't have any hiccups or stay too long. I've been using it this way for years. Just move quickly once you get inside. Shouldn't take you more than a few minutes to grab an item, should it?" "No, it shouldn't, assuming there are no surprises," she said, closing her eyes. "I'm starting to wonder exactly what will happen if we fail."
"We will make it," Shigidi said firmly.
But even Alistair, his eyes back on the road, could tell that Shigidi was not so certain.